This is an ABC podcast. Strong language.
For copyright reasons, the music has been edited. To hear the full tracks, listen to The J-Files, Thursday nights on Double J, or head to doublej.net.au and click on the track list at the bottom of each episode.
Hey, it's Kaz Tran here. Welcome to The J-Files, the podcast for people who love music. Each episode is like a quick music history lesson. We pick a different artist or band, we look at some of the most important moments in their career, and we celebrate their impact on music, all in less than 30 minutes. On this episode, it's Busta Rhymes, a rapper with one of the greatest flows in hip-hop.
Tell me what you really want to do, come here, ma. Talk to me, just talk to me. You look like you can really give it to us. Don't know where you're talking, the way you try to walk for me, the way you really try to put it on a guard. Doing it like I never did before for me, the way you break your back and I break your neck, and the way you try to put it on a floor for me. Come on, come on, come on.
Since the early 90s, Busta Rhymes has been a singular voice in hip-hop. His work has helped push dark, hard-hitting rap into the mainstream, and he's had a huge influence on hip-hop artists around the world, including some local faves who you'll be hearing from a little later on. But first, to talk us through his impact and legacy, I caught up with music journalist and Busta Rhymes superfan, Sosafina Fuamoli. We started out by looking at Busta's life before music and his rise to prominence.
This is one of my favourite, I guess, hip-hop origin stories. When we think about hip-hop and its origins, it started in New York. You know, it's a melting pot of influences and upbringings that really kind of formed this beautiful tapestry and a history of music that we know and love today. But for Busta, his story starts in Brooklyn, East Flatbush, New York City, shifts to Long Island as well, but essentially a lot of people will know him for being, you know, down in the dirt with Brooklyn. Well-known fact, he went to high school with the Notorious B.I.G. and Jay-Z too. So I wonder what the schoolyard would have been like back then. There are some stories about, Jay-Z would have witnessed, like, rap battles happening, in the lunchrooms
and
stuff.
In the lunchroom? I read about that.
Imagine.
Yeah, can you? Can you just? It's like going home and telling your mum and dad, oh, I just watched these two guys just going at it verbally and it was awesome.
Absolutely. So in terms of how he grew up, you've got some really, prophetic, I guess, upbringings.
Yeah, yeah. Fate was telling you, where your life is headed.
Exactly. As he's growing up, one of the other things I really enjoy about Busta is the fact that, and you hear it in his music, particularly in the early material, you can hear his cultural accents coming through. So his parents were both Jamaican, and at the time in hip-hop as well, there was a very strictly New York sort of sound to the flow, but where Busta kind of came through and changed things and began to stand out was you could hear his patois in his raps.
Heal up, wheel up, bring it back, come rewind, powerful impact, boom! From the cannon.
Aesthetically, he was one of the only rappers rapping with dreads and, just really sort of embracing that side of his culture, and I feel like that really stemmed from obviously growing up with parents who really enforced that as well. So I don't know, I've got this image of him as a youngster kind of scrapping around but standing out at the same time, and I feel like that's definitely formed a foundation for how he went on for the rest of his career.
Yeah, and very proudly showing Absolutely. Off that ancestry, that connection to his heritage.
Mm.
So then how did his first crew come together, Leaders of the New School? Were they at that school as well?
Yeah, well, I believe, I can't remember which one of the members it was, but there was
Charlie Brown,
got cousins and stuff. It's, that whole thing of you could be your real family or your play family. Now you know what I'm talking about, because we've all got that too.
Yeah.
Leaders of the New School, forming in 1990, going on to produce some quite, again, genre-defining records. I mean, they were only together for about 4 years, but in that time they were still able to make a mark. And I feel like that's also another good talking point, for a lot of diehard hip-hop fans. I feel like when we talk about hip-hop's golden era, obviously, there's a lot of discussion and discourse around the years of like 1996 to 1997. You know, we had obviously Biggie and Tupac in their prime, but then on the East Coast you had the Fugees coming through, Wu-Tang had just released 36 Chambers, Tribe as well. But in the earlier part of the 90s, again from 1990 to about 1993-92, you had some amazing, incredible artists who were really setting a high standard. And I do think leaders of the new school sometimes get left out of that conversation when they shouldn't be. Mm. Their debut album, A Future Without a Past, dropped in 1991. And it's, I don't know, I went back and revisited it last week, and it still slaps. Slaps. We're talking like 17 songs for a young group as well. For it to sound as cohesive as it does, it's quite remarkable. In terms of leaving a legacy, they went out with a bang.
Yeah, for sure. There were plenty of people around who mentored and saw that potential in leaders in the new school. They got invited to go out and support Public Enemy, didn't they? They were mentored by Chuck D.
Chuck D gave them their names.
Yeah.
Charlie Brown and Busta Rhymes, named by Chuck D.
That doesn't happen to every kid who's coming up a fan of hip-hop. Sort of like Chuck D steps into the picture.
Yeah, and again, that's, imagine having that as, you know, having those guys as mentors. You're seeing a group who's not only very politically aware and socially aware, but unafraid to shift genres as well and really embrace other styles of music and making something really individual,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you were aware of leaders in the new school in those, you know, the early era. Could you hear, you know, that competitiveness, which was, you know, the source of the friction too between Busta and Charlie, because they didn't last long.
No.
You know, as you mentioned, short but, you know, a significant legacy. You know, yeah, I mean, that's obviously part of what gave them that creative kind of difference.
Mm. But, yeah, I feel like, what stands out about a group like that, and we've kind of seen it, I'm not making a direct comparison, but in terms of having so many different personalities in the mix, you can see that now with groups like Brockhampton, you know, just the allowance to have different personalities shining on their own is a balance that is really hard to strike, particularly when it comes to rap. But for sure, you can hear the beginnings of this real sort of visceral energy within Busta Rhymes' own sort of cadence and flow that was, in my opinion, always going to eclipse the other members of the group. And sometimes that's just how it happens with a dynamic, you know, someone just has, they've got that focus pulling sort of effect.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here. Could you just acknowledge to go talk to my mommy? Know when she gets home, she's gonna wear the body. Hey, this relationship, the mom and teacher. When she reaches home, yo, she knows how to reach ya. Okay, up to date, I am the new school prank. Between my mom and teacher and my dad. Hey, yo, it's just another case of that OPTA.
After Leaders of the New School broke up, Busta didn't jump straight into making his debut album, even though, you know, he had a lot of supporters behind him and who were saying he's the star. He's the star of Leaders of the New School. You know, he chose to kind of jump on and be featured on other people's tracks. And,
which is really smart.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can you talk about that? Why do you think he did that? You know, what was his intention with taking that approach?
I mean, I feel like it's a good way to show versatility, for one. Easy to get pigeonholed as the sort of brash, sort of scrappy battle rapper. Don't you get suspicious, grant your wishes every time. Bring it vicious when I bust the back. But he, in between the breakup of the group and then him releasing his debut project, there was a bunch of collaborations, whether that was like with Big Daddy Kane, or he was even doing stuff with Ice Cube at that time. We began to see the deepening of his relationship with A Tribe Called Quest in that period, which is really cool too. Not unashamedly, but he also featured on two of my most favourite R&B records of all time. He's on interludes on both Crazy Sexy Cool by TLC. 1995. This year, I want one of them crazy. sexy, cool women. You know what I'm saying? And also, What's the 411 by Mary J. Blige.
Yes.
So.
Stay tuned and relax and listen. Because you're about to see in a split second.
Two records that are very important to me in terms of my upbringing with the genre, but again, to have such a gritty voice on records that are so smooth and so, I guess, rooted in female energy, that showed a boldness to be able to mix in and not be restrained by, I guess, the music that had come before him or the music that he was known for at the time.
Yeah, and not to take it as though it's, you know, emasculating him or, you know, in any way to kind of be, you know, doing the smooth and, you know, singing at times too. You've heard him do that and sort of tap into emotions.
Definitely. And again, that's something that we hear later on in his career on even like the most recent records he's put out too, that sort of dip between, you know, very quick spitfire bars and then kind of stripping it back and taking it a bit slow.
Yeah,
it's really cool. It's very, very smart.
And now, for the moment all you motherfuckers been waiting for. The coming!
You know, you talked about the seeing that early potential and how, you know, his style, his unique flow and cadence, you know, was obvious with Leaders in the New School, you know, with these features that were coming out. We were always kind of waiting for when it was Buster's turn, wasn't it?
Like, yeah.
And he kind of just took up that space. It's kind of like all about him. He was often given the, you know, the final verse to jump in on a lot of these features.
Well, imagine leading with him.
He went off online.
Like, I don't know what to do with this. I'm going to let him ride out, you know, and know that you're always going to get something out of it too.
Yeah, that is so true.
That unpredictability about him is, it's obviously why he's still regarded as one of the best to do it, I think.
He put out the debut album finally in 1996 called The Coming. Mm-hmm. It was a big year for hip hop.
We had
90s generally, yes. But in 96, Jay-Z had Reasonable Doubt, Atlians, Outkast, Roots, Tupac, Fugees,
Dr. Dre.
Oh my God, you know the list. What do you see as the impact of Buster's album in that time, The Coming?
You think about this record, you know, in I guess the pantheon of everything else that was coming out in that year in particular, there's something about this record that is just so dirty and it's hardcore.
Right.
Like, I think about this record stacking up against, like, the first Lil' Kim record, and I feel like they could be at opposite ends of the same spectrum a little bit, you know, just different perspectives. But the way that the production's laid down, some of the rhymes, some of the interludes are just like, again, I listened to it on the way in today and I was just like, wow, they're really going to just put a whole interlude on here about like just graphic sex and a side piece being like the wife in law. And it's a whole time, but you could get away with it back then. You wouldn't be able to get away with it now, but back then it was hardcore hip hop at its finest, you know, and it was definitely a way to show people that, you know, even though we'd heard Buster on all of these different projects and it came to his singular vision, it was very individual and it was very unique. And it definitely stood out, again, like I said, against everything else that was coming out at the time. You know, the West Coast was definitely having its moment with its super laid back G-funk influenced style of rap. And then on the East Coast, again, you had it wasn't a singular voice, but it was definitely a familiar flavor with Biggie, with P. Diddy, or Puff, as he was at that point. You know, the whole sort of Bad Boy roster was really coming through with their sound. Staten Island had Wu-Tang and their whole image coming through, but no one was really doing what Buster was doing, and I feel like this album is a really good snapshot of that even now.
My rhymes create life like the birds and the bees, make funk master flex, say, yo, I'm feeling me. Flows make your shit in your jaws, change your dungarees, smoke trees, get cotton mouth while I'm on cheese.
No one raps like him. Like, no, like, the man's lung capacity is off the charts. A lot of people will put Buster and, say, Eminem in the same conversation in terms of their technical ability to rap. And I feel like that's a pretty fair coupling. But with Buster, like, even to see him live, being able to just go off the rip and freestyle in that way, no, I've never seen anybody be able to do that now. And this is a man who's, like, pushing 50 and he can still do it now. Like, it's absolutely insane to
That is pretty crazy.
But he's just – and as a storyteller, he's got such a vivid way of painting his narratives, whether or not he wants to get political, whether or not he wants to, you know, give us an image of what it was like for him growing up, or if he wants to just go completely fantastical and tell us a story about, you know, the highs of being a rap superstar. He does it in his own way, and whenever you hear a Buster record, there is something kind of sexy about it, you know? He really kind of brings you into his world, and he's got his own groove, which I really love.
Swag mania, pop the ghost, most carry the most beautiful bitches with us, happily toast. Keep the faculty close, gross when we give them a dose. Got them OD and leaning in each coast, scenery froze. Take notes, rock boats, diamonds that fit us. Chanel minks in the winter, who fucking with us? We coming to give them the shivers. Water we flow, spilling like rivers. Flooding the street, hoping niggas are swimmers, moving gorillas. King Kong, Godzilla's when we roll up. Seat filling niggas, get up when I show up.
Please don't go up.
It's interesting. I feel like his impact has definitely, it's given generations of artists the freedom to, again, just go a bit crazy and explore things in their own way that isn't sort of held back by major label or, you know, management sort of expectations of what a quote-unquote successful rap star should be. We've spoken about it before, but I really do think it's super important just to go back to the beginning and just see how he was really pushing his own individual voice. And I feel like that's something that a lot of his contemporaries have tried to follow. Not necessarily emulate, but look at him and be like, okay, well, he's been able to do it. I can do it too. Or here's someone who looks like me and I can follow that as well. Mm. Like, he's been able to do it. I've been able to do that too. Obviously, he isn't just a rapper, I should say. Like, he did the acting thing for a bit there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of involved himself in different areas of the business too. And I feel like to see artists like him, you know, you got artists like Ice Cube, Jay-Z's obviously the biggest example of, I guess, black success coming out of the rap game. But to see an artist like him take his platform and sort of flip it into something that's sustainable for not just him but a community and generations of younger artists to come from, you know, to come after him, I feel like that's an incredible legacy that he's built up.
Yeah, and who still want to work with him. They're not just coming after him. They're like, hey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, the record that he put out last year, I mean, he's the only person that I can think of who's managed to get Kendrick Lamar out of his, like, little cone of silence that he's been in for, like, the last however many years.
Yeah, yeah. He's not going to come out just for anybody.
No. And it's a beautiful collaboration, too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah.
I wrote my first bars in the car with Stacey. How bizarre, my battle scars at large will lace me. Big marbles, nigga. I lead this new generation. Boy, don't argue with us. Marvelous beat selectors, authors, and all will spit us.
Yeah, I mean, another thing, which I think is really admirable with him, and you've probably got an opinion on it as well, Saucy, he's really kind of championing the fact that hip-hop is rooted in Caribbean culture. That's where it's come from. Mm. And, you know, he thinks that that's a fact that's often been overlooked.
Yeah.
And I think that he's a great kind of representation and, you know, a voice to bring back awareness of that.
Definitely. He makes so many good points, and I feel like especially now we're seeing so many different styles of hip hop become more mainstream. You know, you've got, you know, Latino rappers, you've got Polynesian rappers. It's become very multicultural, and I feel like that is amazing. And at the same time, it's a great opportunity to actually acknowledge where the roots of the genre actually began. And for, you know, a lot of it is rooted in, you know, the Afro-Caribbean culture. I just think it's great that the conversations that are happening now, they've been conversations that he's been kind of championing from the rip. So
yep,
it's great to look back and just be like, oh wow, he was actually doing the thing.
For sure. You know, I love that he's taken it out of a much larger and intimidating prospect of it being an American culture. You know, it actually came from the Afro-Caribbean culture, and you know, it's found its way all around, you know, the world.
Well, yeah.
But it started in this tiny little island nation, and in a lot of ways it makes it more feasible that, you know, it can belong to anybody.
It can belong to anybody. And that's a great thing about hip hop, and like, you know, it's, you can find it in the pockets of some of the smallest, most remote communities.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's connecting through rhythms or connecting through like beat patterns, and then on a more in-depth level, the lyricism as well. You know, people can connect with the struggle, and they can connect with the most primal of things. And I feel like there's not many other genres that'll have that sense of kind of global connection, you know?
Let's go. Dress ready to impress. Fresh up in my Louis suit. Step up in the club. Bitches line up ready to salute. Let me squeeze your juicy fruit. Mommies call me Huey New. Step up like a cracker. That's an actor getting movie loose.
Get on your mark and get set ready to go. Funny, but these niggas already know that when I get no microphone, just I done already show. Shitty don't niggas miraculous flow. Got niggas trying to repair all the damages low. That's an emphatical no. Slap him up, clap him up, bundle these niggas like packages, wrap him in bandages slow. I see a lot of bitches in a hungry flow.
Yes, huge thanks to music journo Sossafina Fool Molly for her brilliant take on the career of Busta Rhymes. His influence extends right across the world, and there are many Australian artists who've drawn inspiration from his work. In 2019, Baker Boy joined Linda Mariano on Triple J's Inspired podcast. It's a podcast where artists share the story behind one of their songs. Baker Boy talked through his breakout single, Mariuna, and during the chat, he mentioned how he'd always admired Busta's fast flow.
Have you always been a fast talker? Do people ever tell you to slow down?
Yeah, sometimes, especially when I'm talking in language to my cousin, I'll talk really fast. Because like, I kind of like grew up listening to, you know, Bone Thugs and Harmony, Busta Rhymes and stuff. So I've always like wanted to try and, you know, listen to their flow and try to catch their, what they're saying and stuff, especially to Busta Rhymes. Busta Rhymes is, you know, like tongue twister.
What are your favourite tracks from those acts?
One of them would be Look at Me Now.
You ain't never gonna stop me. Every time I come, a nigga gotta set it, then I gotta go, and then I gotta get it, then I gotta blow, and then I gotta shut it. Any little thing, a nigga.
That's when I found out about Busta Rhymes. He kept going and going and going and going, and then he, like, in the track, you hear him take a deep breath. And I was like, whoa, like, how can you keep, like, rapping like that?
I love it. It's like, you know, and hearing your verses in this track like this. And you can hear those deep breaths as well. Yeah. You're just like, boom, like pounded out there towards the mic, Baker Boy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right. Along with Baker Boy, here's some of the other Australian artists whose work has been inspired by Busta Rhymes.
Hey, it's your boy Arnold Faraji coming in from Perth, WA. The thing that inspired me most about Busta is his enunciation and ballistic delivery. He's got this dope flow that can shoot at any pace and is explosive on contact. Like, as soon as it hits your brain, it's like, psh, you know? And I've always admired artists who add character and individuality to their sound. And Busta is like one of the best examples of that. He inspires me to push my flows and style to crazy levels and like not even try to stop there, just keep it pushing, you know? And you can tell he spends a lot of time within his craft, and I'm influenced to want to do the same.
Give me some more. Yo, Slip, where the weed at? Give me some more. I know y'all niggas need that. Give me some more. Even though we getting money, you could give me some more. With the cars and the big crib, give me some more. Everybody spread love. Give me some more. If you want it, let me hear you say it. Give me some more.
Yo, what's poppin', fam? It is Esso from Bliss and Esso right here. He literally sounded like a dungeon dragon, just spitting absolute flames. Everything he put out, I needed to hear it, and I needed to see it, because the visuals were just as important. And all of Busta Rhymes' film clips back in the days, man, he had a guy called Hype Williams working on a lot of them. And the costumes, the creativity, the camera angles, it was just next level, and always inspired us to be creative, you know, think outside the box, don't let yourself be pigeonholed. And yeah, Busta Rhymes is forever a legend in my eyes.
Mommy, listen, I feel your love for me, baby, and how it moved through you. I've been longing for the moment to talk the truth to you. Listen, I'm never home, I always get up and go, putting you through the unnecessary rigmarole.
Yo, what's goody? This is A-Girl. I first discovered Busta Rhymes when I was mad young. It was when I heard him and Mariah on I Know What You Want. And that bass line at the front was just so fresh, I could never forget that shit. The thing that inspires me the most when it comes to Busta Rhymes is probably his versatility and his ability to just jump on anything and murk it is, yeah, next level. Just when it comes to Busta Rhymes' flows, I feel like that's how he has influenced my music heavily. I try and incorporate different flows and tackling different types of tracks with different flows. In my singing and my rapping.
With another bang and I call it a cliffhanger. Watch me mangle a strangle, this whole rap shit. Come on. You can see the way you make a man sick from down bottom. The way I got him, give me my cash quick. Come on.
Hey, this is Dobby. I'm a proud Mortal Warrior Filipino rapper, drummer. The thing that inspired me the most about Busta is his rhythm. It's probably my favorite thing about him. My favorite Busta song is Don't Touch Me Now, Throw the Water on Him. It's just drums, bass, and Busta. And he floats over the beat like a sax player, like a saxophonist, just scatting. My favorite album is The Abstract Dragon, his collab album with Q-Tip, just because it's like this mad, wonderful throwback to Tribe Called Quest. And I really, really love that.
Pardon me. Now give me room again. It's time to raise the level of the boom again.
Now who's that?
Busta, Busta, Busta Rhymes. See, I ain't do that in a long time.
What it is, what it is. This is Howl Not to Get Food, the presenter of Sky High on Double J and the Hip Hop Show on Triple J. The thing that inspired me about him was his presence, not only on stage, but on a song. Whenever it was his turn to do his rhyme, he owned it. He stood out. His energy was unmatchable. And he was always a memorable feature whenever he, you know, collaborated with other artists. And on the Leaders of the New School, he always stole the show. How he's influenced my music is just that. It was to just go all out. Like the cliche says, you leave it all out in the field. And it just felt like that every time he did a track. Or whenever I saw live footage of him or Leaders of the New School, he would just go all out.
Hit you with no delays of what you saying, yo. Silly with my 9 milli with the dilly, yo. When I be on the mic, yes, I do my duty, yo. While up in the club like we while in the studio.
Hey, my name is Earthboy, and I am excited to talk about Busta Rhymes. One thing I've especially loved about Busta, especially as I've gotten older, is really appreciating the artist that he continuously evolved into. So he never stood still, and if you've seen him live, he brings so much innovation to his performances. It's like he dials it right up. You know, there's a whole nother level that he reaches with his routines and the way that he entertains. And I look at that and I see that no one has an excuse to just sort of become a bit comfortable in the way that they perform as they get older. We always have to challenge ourselves, and we always have to find new things in our own creative being that make it interesting for ourselves. But if we can then take the audience on a whole nother trip, like where did this come from, then I feel like we're taking a leaf out of Busta Rhymes' book. Certainly one of the greatest of all time.
100% with you on that call, Earthboy. His profound skill on the mic, his incredible talent as a writer, and his blistering live performances are some of the reasons why Busta Rhymes has been a titan of hip-hop for so long. The J Files is a Double J podcast. Make sure you like, follow and share. Our producer is Gab Burke, with production support from Sam Wicks and Phoebe Bennett. Theme music is by Art vs. Science. You can check out Double J anytime on the Triple J app or at doublej.net.au. I'm Kaz Tran. Thanks for listening.